Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Alexis the midwife.
And I'm Becky the doula.
Welcome to Notes from the Mother Box, where we will be having real and frank conversations about the highs and lows of the parenting journey.
And if you enjoy this episode, don't forget to subscribe on Acast, iTunes and Spotify, and follow us over on Instagram.
So pop the kettle on, pour yourself a cuppa, get comfy and enjoy this week's episode of Notes from the Mother Box.
Today, we are so excited to have the absolutely gorgeous Nadia Essex join us for a chat. Nadia is a dating guru, host of the fabulous Clueless Mum podcast, baby blogger, columnist, and mother to her gorgeous baby, Ezekiel. Nadia, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming, darling. Well, just to start with, obviously as new podcasters, we wanted to say that we have been loving The Clueless Mum, really enjoying it. And actually, what is really our jam is your honesty and the fact that you talk about the things that go well, you talk about the challenges, you talk about the magic and you talk about the lower points. And I think that's really important when you're sort of sharing. And as you say, when you put, you know, with your podcast episodes, building a community where people sort of feel like they can talk about how they're honestly feeling. What made you decide to create The Clueless Mum in the first place?
Oh, gosh, I think it was probably out of boredom, if I'm honest. I was pregnant and I was kind of twiddling my thumbs. I was like, well, I don't know what to do with myself, but I'm going through all, like, I had a very tough pregnancy. Mm-hmm. It was very difficult. And I was like, every time I would go on the internet or go on Instagram and I'd be searching for people that felt like me, I just couldn't find anybody really. And there was no one really, like, there was kind of the two camps of either glowing, wonderful, never felt better pregnancies or the pregnancies that were, you know, so horrific. And you just saw mums with their head down a toilet pan, you know, looking like rubbish. And I was like, I'm not either of those. I fit into both of those, but on different days. And I'm not really either of those. I'm kind of somewhere in the middle. And I just found it. And I thought, well, if I'm feeling this way and going through this, then surely there must be other people that feel the same. And I thought that podcasting was something that it's just an easy way to get the narrative out there.
Yeah.
That actually, I don't know, there's a lightness to podcasting and to listening to podcasts. You know, you put something on Instagram or social media and there's always going to be lots of like negativity and backlash, but with podcasting people come because they want to listen, and so you, it's just a nicer feel to the community. So as soon as I started, I was like, this is for me.
Amazing.
I totally get that makes sense. And also because of a lot of the things that you discuss, and we'll talk more about that with you today, but I think it just really validates other people's feelings as well, and they can take home what they want. They can be like, oh, I didn't experience that, or they might be like, yes, that's exactly how I felt. So actually it either kind of like, you know, gives them more information and knowledge, or like opens up some more ideas, and like you say, shares that narrative,
hopefully. I mean, when I was pregnant, it was very much just like me every week. Producer Martin would come to my house. Oh, the baby's crying. You're okay, baby. You're okay. Producer Martin would come to my house and he would say, what should we talk about this week? It was that organic in terms of we didn't pre-plan it. It was just me chatting into a microphone, mm. which I think helped with the organic feel of it. Mm.
So we know from listening to your podcast that you didn't find out you were pregnant, did you, until you were 10, was it 10 weeks? So what was that like, love? Because the first trimester is pretty tricky, isn't it?
Yeah, it was actually just before 10 weeks. And I don't know. I mean, I would consider myself, I was 37 when I got pregnant, and I would consider myself a woman of the world. Been around the block a few times, kind of, you know, with it. But I had absolutely no clue I was pregnant because I just, nobody told me about the symptoms of pregnancy.
Yeah.
I didn't know that like sore boobs, like ridiculously sore boobs were a symptom of pregnancy. I just didn't know. I didn't know that.
Well, no one does teach you, do they, actually? You only know those symptoms when you're kind of trying and you start looking them up, I think. That's when I first found out about them.
Yeah, and
when do we get to all that stuff, really?
Which is criminal that girls do not know and are not taught in school the signs of being pregnant. Because I didn't have morning sickness. I had all day sickness. And actually, the mornings, I felt best. So I'd wake up in the morning and I'd feel good and I'd have a cup of coffee and I'd feel good and I'd slowly deteriorate throughout the day. Mm. And by supper time, I was like, no, can't cope. The fatigue as well. Mm. Again, I didn't know that that was a symptom. I honestly, and it sounds overdramatic and I say it all the time, but this is where my head was at. So about 6 months before I got pregnant, I went vegetarian. And so I called my doctor and I said to my doctor, I need an appointment because something's wrong. Best case scenario, I'm anemic. Worst case scenario, I've got cancer.
Yeah, I remember listening to your podcast and you said that and I thought it was really interesting. How frightening for you though as well to feel that way.
Yeah.
I couldn't get it together. I just couldn't shift it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just the furthest thing from my mind that I could be pregnant because, you know, when we conceive Zeke, you know, we use protection.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And you just don't think that anything would, it just doesn't enter your mind that is a possibility that could happen. So it was so far off my radar. And it was only one of my girlfriends who is a mum, literally, we went for lunch the afternoon of my doctor's appointment and she was like, look at your tits, you are pregnant. And I was like, no. She's like, they're huge.
Yes.
They are massive.
They do get big.
Your boobs are big. You're exhausted. You've gone off the booze, which I'm a drinker. So for me was huge.
Yeah.
And she was like, yeah, go and get a pregnancy test. And I was like, right, I'm going to prove you wrong. And I, peed on the stick. And before I pulled my knickers up, the line just came straight up. So I was like, oh, okay then.
There it is.
There it is. I haven't got cancer. Woo!
Yeah, so I was going to say, in a way, maybe it made absorbing pregnancy a bit easier because you were like, oh, phew.
Absolutely. That's what it is.
Going back to the morning sickness thing, I was, Nadia, I know exactly what you mean, because I remember, and I've been, by the way, a midwife for donkey's years before this happened. So this is my second baby. So I'd been in midwifery for 8 or 9 years by the time she was born. And I remember, like you, my mornings, I was actually quite bouncy and full of energy. Now, I had sort of the standard sort of morning sickness rather than obviously some people who have hyperemesis really severe. So I could get on with my life. I just felt lousy by the time the afternoon hit. And I remember I used to do all of my community visits as a midwife in the morning. So I could be back at my desk at 3 to 4 o'clock in the afternoon where I knew it got bad. And that would be when I remember I'd literally have my head on my hands. And I couldn't not tell my colleagues because I'm in an office full of midwives, right? With my head in my hands at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. White as a sheet. And it's just so misleading, isn't it, how rough you can feel throughout the day and in the so evenings rough. As well.
Like death. I felt like absolute death. And I've got a phobia against being sick.
Honey.
So for me, I was like chomping my teeth together, being like, I'm not going to be sick. I'm not going to be sick. It was horrible. And I was so poorly. I ended up going to the doctor and getting anti-sickness tablets because my mental health was affected so badly. I didn't want to wake up. And I don't mean that in a wanting to end my life way, it just, when I woke up in the morning, I would have to go through the whole cycle of feeling nauseous, feeling sick, waves of it coming, potentially being sick, and just going through the whole cycle again. And I just didn't want, I was like, I can't, there's no, it's never ending.
Waves is a great way to describe it, because I don't know if you found this, but I'd get a bit prickly and hot and it would almost wash over me, this nausea feeling that I'd be like I said, head in my hands, not knowing what to do with myself. And then sort of, then that wave would dissipate and I'd be like, okay, I feel all right for 10, 15 minutes. And then, oh no, here it comes again.
Yeah. And so you can't really concentrate on anything else, because especially for me, the minute I would get those tingles, I'd know it was coming. So I'd start getting like palpitations and it would just be a really vicious cycle.
Yeah, for you, that's definitely, because if you've got an anxiety, like if you've got a phobia, then obviously anxiety, one of the side effects of anxiety is nausea, isn't it? So you've got like double nausea then.
Yeah. And oh, I couldn't eat. And so I felt sick because I was hungry.
Yeah.
But the thought of food made me worse. Yeah. And so I actually lost weight at the beginning for my first, when I first went to the doctor, when I first found out I was pregnant. And then I went to see the midwife. I think they rushed it through. So I went to see the midwife a week later to sort out the scan. And I'd lost a kilo in a week because I just, I couldn't, I couldn't even think about food. It was,
So you have the sickness, and can we just talk for a moment about that bloody fatigue that comes in as well? Again, and we wrote about this, didn't we, in the book, Becky, in the little book of self-care for mums-to-be, because I think there's this concept that we know what tiredness is before we get pregnant and that we're going to be a bit tired, and that's understandable. But it's on a different level, isn't it? It's like, I remember saying, the only way I could describe it to like my friends was, I'm so fatigued in my body that my bones actually hurt.
Yeah.
Like a physical pain, discomfort from tiredness.
Yeah. I mean, I would spend three solid days in bed because I literally could not get out of bed. I couldn't really function. It was like the worst flu mixed with a hangover, but without like the sore throat, you know, without the sort of symptoms. But just like you say, everything was heavy. My bones felt heavy. I mean, I slept, just luckily I was able to. How women continue working?
No.
I don't know honestly how I did it. And because I was working, like I said at the time, I was a community midwife, and it was just absolutely hideous. And I think also it's a really tricky thing in our culture whereby, and you know, everybody does things differently and whatever's right for you is right for you. And a lot of people obviously choose not to tell anyone until they've had the 12-week scan. And perhaps they found out they were pregnant at bloody 3 weeks, you know, like almost like, you know, you're 3 weeks pregnant or whatever, like really early on. And they have to deal with all of those sensations and feelings whilst showing face and not wanting to appear like they might be pregnant. How do you do it? It's so difficult. And you're obviously just feeling like you say, like you just want to crawl under your duvet and just hibernate for 3 months.
And I wonder where the whole, I don't know, it's an interesting question because I don't buy the whole narrative that we hide pregnancy from the first scan because just in case, because surely the statistics of something happening are so low that as a culture shouldn't we be evolved past this now, like asking parents and more importantly women to hide their symptoms and brush it under the carpet and carry on, like you said, carry on like normal. Like society puts a pressure on women to expectation of like, oh, we're not telling anyone so you can't act pregnant. The minute you get pregnant, people should be on their hands and knees putting flowers everywhere you go, being like, you're the best thing that, you know, like this godlike aura around you, because you're about to, your body, you are about to go through the biggest shift in your life that should be supported from the second that you know, not sort of hidden.
That's why your podcast is so good, because I had clients actually say to me, unrelated to this, that they'd listen to your podcast and how nice it was, because until everyone starts talking about the fact that it is quite difficult and we don't have this stoic showing up response to pregnancy and the postnatal period, we don't let ourselves relax or gift ourselves rest, yeah. or, you know, everyone feels like they've got to like drag themselves out of bed and carry on. And like you say, actually, if people did talk about it, then we could like lean in and hold mm. women a little bit more, couldn't we? And we could support our yeah. girlfriends and say, come on, sit down, let me make you a cup of tea. And, you know,
yeah, we really have got to. It's bonkers that we still sort of partake in a tradition that is so damaging to women.
Yeah.
And that, you know, like the minute you find out you're pregnant, if you choose to keep it within your family, but you shouldn't feel like you're going to jinx it if you tell people before the 12th. Like, that's madness.
I've had three babies, and whenever I was pregnant and found out I was pregnant, I actually did tell, and we talk about this again, like my VIPs, because I was like, listen, if the thought process for not telling people is just in case something happens and I don't want to jinx it, or, you know, I don't know, again, but if something bad does happen, or if you do, you know, have a miscarriage, surely you want to have people there to support you and wrap their arms around you anyway, which is a little bit more easy to do if they knew in the first place what perhaps was going on in your life at that time.
100%. Because if something does happen, also as well, you have to deal with telling people something's happened, and then the guilt that maybe they feel bad because you didn't trust them enough to tell them. And the fact, like, there's a lot that's more emotion so that comes with it. And I think that if we can just be encouraged to be honest, we're not going to jinx it.
Yeah.
You know, that's not going to happen. If things don't turn out right, then, you know, unfortunately that can happen. But whether you choose to tell or not, that will not make a difference. So let's like take away the stigma of like potentially jinxing it and let women just rest.
Absolutely.
I totally agree.
Absolutely.
And also, and this is another thing that Becky and I sort of harp on about, is that I think there's also an element, and perhaps I've been guilty of this myself, whereby it's going to be a huge identity shift because suddenly you find out you're going to be a mum. I think especially like the first time round. And again, you don't want to kind of like, you're like, oh, I'm pregnant, I'm not ill. And you kind of think to yourself, I just want to keep going and, you know, like live up to the expectations and crack on with the work I'm doing. And again, you sort of do yourself a disservice. And I think part of it is because of this fact that you are going through a bit of an identity change, and you're worried that if you kind of just admit to yourself that you need to take to your bed early, rest as much as possible, then you're kind of halfway there to kissing goodbye to the life you've known all these years, maybe.
Totally. I remember, so Zeke was born in March, and in December, I remember I wasn't allowed to go to the National History Museum ice rink. And they wouldn't let me go ice skating, and I was highly offended. I was like, what? I can't go ice skating? And they were like, no, you are heavily pregnant. And I was like, but I feel fine. It's not date, like, it's fine. And they're like, no. And it was that moment of like, I'm not ill. I'm not disabled. I'm perfectly capable. Fine. I class myself as a good ice skater. And everyone was like, you nutter, like, don't be so ridiculous. Yeah. And I was like, oh, yeah, probably not the best idea, actually, to be fair. So it is that struggle of like losing yourself, but then giving yourself permission to evolve.
Totally. That's a great
Absolutely.
Way of putting it.
And I think our society needs to help us with that, because we're not a society that celebrates pregnancy or the postnatal period. And in other cultures where Lex and I have been lucky enough to train, I mean, you're like a goddess.
We are.
On a bloody pedestal. We are. But there you're treated like it.
Yeah. And it's, I suppose, you know, and I don't want to sort of be one of those type of women, but it's like, I just think we live in such a misogynistic society that's just, you know, I think it just stems to, if we had more women in powerful roles, top roles, more women in parliament, more women actually out there at the top level filtering stuff down, then I think life would be easier for us. But I think, you know, it's the sort of same. I speak to so many women, it's like, if men had to give birth, there's no way that it would still be painful, because they would put all their funding into making it pain-free. If men had to give birth, their maternity would start from the day they found out. You know, there's lots of things that would be different if men had to give birth. And it's just a real shame that we're kind of like, almost it's like put up and shut up the British, yeah. certainly the British way. And like you said, in other cultures, you know, we're about to give birth yeah. to a new life, a new soul. You know, we are goddesses. This should yeah. be celebrated to the highest, to the moon, you know, like shout it from the rooftops. This is wonderful.
And I tell you what, Nadia, I think you've hit the nail on the head on this, you know, issue, because again, this had a lot of airtime recently with Becky and I feel like if there were more women at the table regarding the whole maternity services during lockdown and COVID, and women being able to have support at scans, at appointments,
absolutely,
you know, seeing the midwives more regularly, having partners be there, birthing partners, whoever they choose to take in with them, whether it's a partner or a doula, mm-hmm. somebody who's able to offer support at the point of birthing, you know, so many women have been contacting us and telling us that they've been going in. And we'll move on to this with you in a second, because I know obviously you had Ezekiel in the actual throes of lockdown
just before it was.
So yeah. you just had him beforehand. Yeah. And I just feel like the last 5 months, there's got to be some significant changes yeah. for what women need at the moment.
And I don't want to like women blame, but you know, when it's like, I'm not being funny, Boris Johnson just had a child.
Mm.
And surely, like, and I, you know, again, and it's not trying to blame women, but where's Carrie being like, hun, do you know what I mean? Like, actually, this would have been a lot more difficult without you. And where was she? Like, he was going through the paternity period while we were, like, where was their empathy, considering they were going through it as parents themselves? Like, I don't understand I don't know if she had these conversations with him, but if it was me, I just don't think I could sit there and not be like, you're the prime minister, you can make a change, and please can you at least address it, make it a topic of conversation, something that you're going to even talk about, not just ignore the whole thing and let thousands and thousands and thousands of women give birth in circumstances that they would choose not to, and go through scans alone and all sorts of stuff. Like, they're going through, I just don't understand.
There needs to be some serious changes. We're confused. It's so confusing at the moment. It's so confusing and inconsistent between trusts that it's like, what is going on, really?
It's just another case of women's health being at the bottom of the list, isn't it? You know, open pubs, can't really be asked to think about women's health right now. We'll deal with that later. Let's just leave it as is. You know, it's just not okay.
Well, it was the same. It was so obvious with, you know, the opening of the barbershops and not being able to have your eyebrows threaded.
Yeah.
You know, it was women's services that didn't even bother. You know, the first thing that we're after lockdown that was able to do was you're allowed to have your cleaner come in. You know, it's like, whoopee-doo, if after lockdown you can still afford your cleaner, good for you, that's great. But, you know, the country's on its knees, hun.
Yeah, and love, you can go and play golf with all of your mates, but you can't join your partner at their scan that they'd really love to have you there.
Yeah.
It's just,
it's a real shame, because I think that, you know, there was a real opportunity to make some fundamental lifelong changes, especially to women's services. And if anything, I feel like we've been pushed further down, and it's going to be harder for us to claw back, because, you know, when is somebody going to stand up for women? When is someone going to come in and really put their foot down and stand up for women, women's health, women's services? Because no one seems to be doing it at the moment, as far as I'm aware, because I'm not hearing anyone shouting from the rooftops that's in a position of power. You know, where's, you know, people talk about Piers Morgan, like, where's Susanna Reid? Like, where is she? You know, he shouts from the rooftop every single morning about his agenda.
Yeah.
Like, let's get the women shouting.
What I will say is that the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists and the Royal College of Midwives are like, we're waiting. And they put out information in August saying, this needs to be seriously reviewed. This is so detrimental for the women who are coming into our care. And they're still waiting.
Yeah.
And we're now in October.
But they're waiting. Who's doing?
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, everyone's sitting waiting. Who's doing? Who's shouting? Who's barging down? Like, you know, I'd love to have the influence to, you know, where's our version of Marcus Rashford?
Absolutely.
What he did for the free school dinners.
Mm. Yeah.
Where's our spokesperson that can come forward?
And you're right, it's the people at the top, isn't it? Because what happens is we spent our lockdown voluntarily fielding calls and taking calls from anxious women and helping women prepare to birth alone sometimes. But that's just, you know, there's a few of us who are trying our best to hold a few women, but it's a bigger thing than that, you know. We need someone bigger.
Could we all gently put our masks on and socially distance and go and make a big circle around Parliament and all squat down on the floor and pretend that we're birthing?
I'd do that.
Yeah,
I'd do that in a heartbeat.
Should we do it, girls?
Let's do it. How many people do you think? How many people would it take to circle or make a ring around in front of Parliament, do you think?
Oh, it'd be amazing.
And all, you know, just groan like a baby's coming out. That'd be amazing, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I'll set up the WhatsApp group later today, darling. Yeah.
And can we have wine as
let's
well?
Let's do the protest first and then wine after. Because I feel like if we're pretending to give birth while downing a Pinot Grigio, we may get in trouble.
Definitely. Listen, girls, talking about birth, I want to hear about Nadia's birth. Now, I know from listening again to the podcast, maybe not everybody who's listening to this knows, you had quite a different idea.
Didn't we all?
What your preferences and your plan was as to how you were going to have this baby. Yeah, didn't we all? Absolutely. And then obviously end up being quite different, but you do speak about it in quite a positive way. Can you talk us through it?
Well, birthing plan, you know, I think I'm a secret hippie. I wanted like water birth. Nice. And essential oils and, you know, spa music and mood lighting and, you know, in, you know, just like working through it and the water washing over me and what's it called? The old hypnotherapy, hypnobirthing. Oh, yeah, the whole lot. I just imagined this like earth mother listening to her body. And then I went in for he's got a really big head and they put him on the big baby list because they thought he was going to be a big baby. And so I had an induction booked for 40 weeks exactly, which was the Monday, shall we say. Yeah. And on the Thursday, I went in for a sweep. And at the same time, I had sciatica.
Oh,
so I now couldn't walk.
Ouch.
He was like sitting on a nerve in my back. Mm. And so I literally was huddled over and had to be led through in a wheelchair because I couldn't actually walk. And in Chelsea and Westminster, they give you like induction club. So you go and you sit for 45 minutes and they talk you through how to do an induction or how they're going to do the induction, which brilliant, by the way. Fantastic.
Mm. It sounds great, actually.
Oh, it was so... I mean, I did NCT and they just didn't... I mean, that was a complete waste of time in itself. But this was just... It was Thursday. My induction was Monday, potentially. And I was like, and I was learning what was going to happen almost step by step. So for me, who I really like information, I was like, okay, I can mentally prepare for this because I know what's going to happen. So she did the sweep. She was like, look, you're 1 centimeter dilated, but you're not soft. Is that the right phrase for the cervix?
Yes. Yeah.
So she was like, if I had to call it, I would say that between now and Monday, you are not going to go into labour naturally. You're not ready. So you're going to be coming back on Monday for your induction. If you want, I can see if we can admit you now and we can just get the process started. And I was like, okay. Why not? Like, that'll do.
Especially if you're in pain, I guess, right?
So
if you've got that sciatica, because that is... debilitating.
I couldn't walk. I literally couldn't. And so that's the point. I would have been in bed for the next few days waiting and hoping that labor would come on because I actually couldn't walk. So it was so I was like, why not? Okay, let's go for it. And the good thing is because I learned about induction, I genuinely believed, even after going through NCT, that you went in for induction in the morning and you have the baby in the afternoon. Genuinely, that's what I believed. So thank God.
It's lengthy, isn't it? And this is what really surprises women. It's like, I think that so many women, and whenever I'm teaching, I'm really frank about this. Listen, if you're going for an induction, you might have a baby 6 hours afterwards, much more unlikely. but you are possibly going to be in there for sort of, you know, it's going to be a couple of days,
yeah,
couple of 2-3 days sometimes even,
yeah,
to get everything to Amy, especially with a first baby, right?
Oh,
so what happened then, Nadia, after that?
Yeah, checked in, and then, yeah, I did the whole shebang. So we did the pessary,
mm-hmm,
and then you wait, is it 6-12
yeah,
hours?
Yeah.
And then that didn't work. Did the nether pessary?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That didn't work. Did the gel?
Yeah.
That didn't work. So 3 days later,
they
were going to break my waters. Mm-hmm. And she pulled out the knitting needle, what they use to break your waters with. And I was like, hell no. No, 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 no. Thank you, but no.
It does look quite scary, doesn't it?
It looks so scary. It's not scary because it actually, apparently, it's like they just nick it and it's done and it's easy.
Yeah, it's like popping a balloon.
Yeah.
Yeah, which, no. And so, and so I was on the hospital bed and I just closed my eyes and I was on my tummy because I was in pain. I was having like mild contractions-ish, but nothing really major, but I was in pain. So I was on my tummy and I just took a minute, and for about 10 minutes, I just spoke to Zeke in my tummy and I was like, you know what? It's okay. You can come. I'm okay. We can do this. We're going to work together. You know, it's now's the time, hun. Mm. Everything's going to be fine. And literally an hour later, my water broke naturally.
Wow.
Thank God, because I was like, phew.
No Amney Hook coming near you.
I was like, my baby boy making me proud already.
Oh, I love that. He's like, all right, mum, all right.
Literally, I was like, it's okay, hun. We, you can come. It's good. So then we went into the room, birthing room, whatever it is. They move you off the ward and put you in your own room. So I was like, oh, getting an upgrade. Yep. Fabulous. And then they put me on the drip because I still wasn't properly contracting. So they put me on the drip to force me into contraction.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, 14 hours later, I had an epidural because my, do you know what, not for any other reason, but my sciatica, I actually, weird as it sounds, enjoyed my vaginal contractions because they took the pain away from my back.
Oh yeah, of course, because it's the same nerve that runs down. Yeah, that shows how much pain you must have been in, though, doesn't it? Do you know what I mean? You're like,
yeah, it was horrific. And so when my vaginal contractions came, I was like, oh, bit of respite, and it was amazing. But then when that finished, and I had a TENS machine as well, and that was going like the clappers. But when that stopped, the pain, the sciatica was so painful. I was like, I can't do it. So they did an epidural, which was fabulous. And then 14 hours later, she was like, look, we can't get the drip right. So they would do the drip. They would put, it would be too, the contractions would be too harsh.
Yeah.
So they'd turn it down and then they would almost stop. Mm-hmm. So they'd turn it up a bit and then they'd be too harsh again. So they literally couldn't regulate my contractions. She was like, so we've got options. The surgeon came in, she's like, we've got options. I'm gonna obviously do the exam and see how far dilated you are, and what we can do is, he's getting a bit distressed, so we might, you know, put a little needle in, nick his head and get the blood to see the oxygen or something like that. And I was like, well, that doesn't sound if I didn't want my waters broken, hun, I didn't I'm not sure about nicking his head, hun. Okay. And she was like, but let's one step at a time, let me do the exam, let's see how far dilated you are. So she did the exam, she was like, and I was like, come on then, tell me, like, where are we
drum
at?
Roll.
Yeah. She was like, okay, so you've dilated 0.5 centimetre.
Oh, and I was Nadia, like, no, oh,
what?
Darling.
She was like, yeah.
14 hours.
Wow. 14 hours, and I dilated 0.5 centimetre. So I literally was 1.5 centimetres dilated after 3.5 days.
Oh, Nadia, stop it.
So she was like, I burst out laughing. I was that's hilarious. Like, really?
Oh, no.
She was like, yep. So she was like, look, the baby's getting distressed, you've been through the ringer, let's just get him out, you know, he's not you've got another 9 centimeters to go, it's not gonna happen, let's just get your baby in your arms. And I was like, yeah, let's. so we went down to have the C-section, and I actually walked from my room to the theatre with my epidural in hand, and the receptionist was like, "What the hell is going on?" The surgeon came running behind me with a chair, being like, "You shouldn't be walking. You've got an epidural." And I was like, "I'm fine. I can do this." And it was like, it was a slow walk, obviously, but I really felt like I needed to do that passage. It was, I mean, it was like 10 meters. It wasn't far.
Yeah.
But I needed to do that. And luckily, I had such a good anaesthetist that I was able to walk with my epidural. Fantastic. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
And so went in, had the C-section, baby came, surgeon burst out into tears. Which I thought was like just really sweet. And then so she started crying. And then the sous chef, whatever the other person is, had to leave because he was like, "I'm going to faint." He was diabetic.
Oh,
he was like, "My sugar level's gone, I'm going to faint." So I'm sitting there off the rocker being like, "What's going on?" And then they put the baby on my chest, and my the drugs, they were a little strong for the C-section, so I couldn't move my hands and my arms. Mm-hmm. So I was like, he's going to fall off. And they're like, "We've got him, he's okay." And I was just trying to push my shoulders to hold him in place. And then they took him away and sort of cleaned him up. I was like, "Don't wipe off the, what's it called? The white stuff?
The vernix.
Don't wipe off the vernix." And they were like, "So he hasn't got any." it's a C-section, huh? And I was like, "Oh." And then that was it.
It's so funny though, isn't it? The things that stick with us that we desperately, you know, I had this whole thing about letting the cord stop pulsing. And Barney was like, "Jesus, stop it." I must have said it like 20 times. He's like, "They've got it. They've got it back."
Yeah, and then that was it. We become
so obsessed, don't we?
So obsessed. And then and then that was it. And it was just fabulous. The whole thing from sort of start to finish was just wonderful. But I think, I honestly think it was wonderful because two things. One, I was explained about the induction, so I was aware that it could take days.
Yeah.
The woman opposite me in the ward didn't turn up to induction club. So day three, she is screaming at the head midwife at midnight. And I mean screaming in her face. "We've been here for 3 days. I can't cope with this. I'm going to leave the hospital." All of this. "I want a C-section. I want this baby out." Going mental. Because for 3 days, she was like, I don't know, she just wanted to rush it. She just was like rushing it.
Yeah.
And I was like, "Hun, chill. Like this process in the hospital is part of the journey. Like it's not, like if you rush, like the baby's coming, you know, it's happening. You're here, it's coming. So if you try and enjoy these days, hours, however long it is, and really enjoy them as part of the bigger picture, you will enjoy your birth a lot more." She's like, no, I can't, no. I want that. The doctor told me that the baby would be here by now. And then the other midwife said this, and she was just going mad. And I was like, "Look, if you want to ruin your own birth." So I have no doubt we had almost exactly the same birth stories because she ended up, induction didn't work for her. Mm-hmm. She ended up having an emergency C-section as well. Mm-hmm. And we pretty much gave birth, I think, same day, but the experience was the same. She, I know, will leave being like, "I had a horrific birth." Mm-hmm. "I had a horrific birth story. I hated it." Mm-hmm. "And I had almost identical and I loved it." And it was all mindset.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
That reminds me, Nadia, of when Mark Harris speaks about how two births can look pretty much exactly the same from the outside, but can be completely experienced differently by the woman. So Mark Harris, who's a male midwife, very well known, has a company called Birthing for Blokes. And I remember Becky and I did some training with him, and he was saying, you know, you can have two women, they both labour for the same time, they both have a water birth, they both, you know, from the outside seem to have had a very similar experience. And then afterwards, one of them says, that was the most traumatic day of my life. And the other one says, that was the most empowering experience of my life. I could do it again tomorrow. And I suppose there's something about us not putting, I guess maybe as birthing professionals as well, like midwives, doulas, doctors, like putting an experience onto somebody, because I guess, you know, they experience what they experience in the day. But I think you're so right by what you said. And I think it's almost like quite cute, like that it's called induction club. I think I quite like that. But I think there's something about, there is a mindset that comes from knowledge, which just sets a certain level of expectation for yourself.
In my mind, I was like, this could be the only child I ever have. Mm. Could be. I'm 38 now, you know, as everyone tells me, my biological clock is ticking away, and it could be my only child. So I want to soak up every minute, because in a flash it'll be gone. And it was even now, it's sort of, I have vague memories of things, and you forget the bad stuff and all that sort of stuff. And I was desperate to sort of, to take it all in like a sponge. Oh, I was fully hyper aware that like this was going on, and I was so excited by the process. And I was offered actually as well for the induction to have a private room, and I chose not to. I wanted to stay on the ward. And we were the only people on the ward of six to have our curtains open, like all the time, apart from obviously exams. But we kept our curtains open, because we were the middle bay, because I really was like, we are in this together, Hans. Like, we are all going to give birth. And there was also a part of me, if I'm not going to lie, that was like nosy AF. Like, I wanted to see who was coming in, where she was, what was happening. One woman came in, 20 minutes she was there, and she was French. And all I heard from the next bay was, I go pee-pee, I go pee-pee. And then the midwife was like, you're not pee, he's Irish, you're not pee-peeing, your water's broke, it's okay. She was like, the baby come. He's like, can you feel the baby? She was like, yes. And he literally was like, let me have a look. Looked and was like, oh, Jesus. Rushed her into a gurney, rushed her out of the room. 10 minutes later, came back and was like, yeah, she gave birth. 20 minutes she was in, done. And there was another woman across the road that was just, bless her, was just being sick for 12 solid hours. And it was just such a shame, because she was really struggling. And it was just horrendous. That, like, but it was like, it was, we were all, the camaraderie of being together. I didn't want to be, and initially I was like, oh, I don't know if I want to be on a labour ward with all these strangers. But actually, the isolation of being in a room by yourself with just you and the baby would have been worse for my mental health. Like, at least for the induction, like, we laughed, we joked, and I tried to make it fun. And we had a really good time.
And when he arrived, when you finally got to meet this gorgeous boy after all of this time, can you describe how that felt for you?
I knew that I loved him. But I didn't get that rush of overwhelming what people, you know, what they say, like life changing. For me, this was about a week before we went into lockdown. So something was happening. We were the last lot in the hospital that were allowed a birth partner. And then after us, when we were leaving, they were like, no more. That's it. So we were so lucky. So I knew there was a something in the air. This was scary. This was different. And so I went home, and my birth partner would came round every day for about a week just to help out. And then she had bad asthma, so she needed to shield. So literally overnight, I went from having help to having no one. And I just couldn't relax into letting myself get overwhelmed with love. And so for the first couple of months, I loved him, but I didn't feel the euphoricness, like I was in survival mode.
That is very normal for a lot of women. That is another thing that I always discuss with clients that I'm working with, and I sort of say, you know, how do you think you'll feel the moment you meet your baby? And of course, there's always moments where they're like, you know, completely in love, like it's going to be magical, relief that the birth, however it's played out, is over. But we also talk about the fact that there's likely to be quite a bit of adrenaline in the system. There's likely to be exhaustion from the fact of what your body's just been through. And you're absolutely right. Some women, it takes a few minutes to feel that sort of deep, euphoric, oxytocin rush of love. Sometimes it takes a few hours. Sometimes it's a few days later when you get home. And sometimes one of my very good friends went through something exactly like you're describing. She realised it was really only 2 or 3 months afterwards that she looked at her daughter and thought, oh my gosh, the connection suddenly, you know, the sort of the beat of her heart just seemed to kind of come into place.
It grows even now every day. Like even just talking about it, I could get emotional because now I'm there. For the first couple of months, I didn't let myself get carried away. It was just me 24 hours a day. You know, there was no respite. Every 2 hours he was feeding, it was all on me. The cooking, the cleaning, the washing, the feeding, everything. And so, God, yeah, it took a while for those like real rush to come.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it did come.
Yeah, I know it did. And I remember listening to you talking about sort of looking at his little face. And actually, I think this was in the early days, so it might not be when you sort of had felt that completely develop at that point. But I remember you saying, oh, the little facial expressions that he's pulling were just... I mean, they're just incredible, aren't they? Those little faces that babies make just set your heart on fire, don't they? Yeah. And you were saying it reminded you of yourself that you make those faces as well.
And as he's grown, it's only got worse.
Yeah.
Like the facial expressions are now full pelt. He's got the same furrowed brow.
Yeah.
So he'll very much, if he doesn't understand, he'll sort of furrow his brow like, eh? What's she saying? What's going on? And then burst out laughing. So yeah, he definitely, unfortunately for him, picked up my facial expressions, I'm sure.
How old is he now, Nadia?
7 months.
Between 5 and 10 months. Don't get me wrong, there's joy in all of it, but the 5 to 10 months has always been one of my favourite periods for babies. I love how interactive they are. They often get to the point, obviously, they're like trying out food, they're sitting up, you can sit them on a mat and put some bricks and toys in front of them and they'll be like joyous with it. They're hopefully by that stage, not always, but for a lot of babies, there's a little bit more of a rhythm to their sleeping and so that you're a little bit better rested. I say, I'm not speaking for everyone because I know there are babies that, you know, takes a bit longer for them to get into it. But for me personally, I found between 5 and 10 months, I could go and do that time and time again because I love that period.
It's so fun. It's so, he makes me laugh every day because something, he like you say, he's interactive. And I was looking actually yesterday at videos of him and it's so weird how like newborns, they're just so vacant, aren't they? There's just nothing much happening. They're great and it's fab and he was teeny tiny, but now I'm like, oh, I wouldn't change that for this because he's just, he's such a character.
I remember one of my friends referring to their babies each time in those early stages where they sort of just really feed, poo and sleep. And they used to call her the little roast beef. They're just like, she's just like a little roast beef. She just kind of doesn't do a whole lot. Although those little faces that they do make up for the fact that obviously in those early days, it kind of is quite repetitive what's going on. Now, moving forward to obviously this bit now, what would you say is the best part of your motherhood experience, like at the moment where you are?
Oh, I think he is old enough and I'm kind of, we're a good team. I mean, I feel more confident than I've ever felt being his mum because 7 months down the line, this is where we're at. So I definitely feel, you know, we've got our groove. And things are going well. And just, you know, I love the amount of time that we get to spend together. I love waking up and, you know, jumping out of bed, and he'll be in his cot, and sometimes he'll be crying, and other times he'll just be chatting away to himself. Mm. And I'll walk in and he'll just be there, just staring up to the world, just chatting away to himself. Every morning I'm like, oh, my heart. Oh. And it's just great. Like, you can see he's starting to get a real personality. So I'm getting a lot more back. And that in itself is so much fun.
Yeah. Oh, lovely.
One of your podcasts that I listened to that really made me a bit sad was you were talking about your mum-to-be guilt, which not many people talk about, actually. We often talk about mum guilt, but, you know, mummy-to-be guilt. And I have loads of clients who have the same thing. They're constantly beating themselves up about not doing the same as somebody else. What would you say to a mum who's doing that to themselves? Because you moved past that, didn't you? And you kind of had a word with yourself and managed to kind of let that guilt go. What would you say, top tips for moving past the guilt?
Have a word with yourself and just, you know, you again, for some reason, and I don't know why, but in the Western world, there's a societal pressure to have the best, be the best and do the best. And when it comes to babies, that's heightened. One of my friends went to the baby show, which is fabulous and I highly recommend it. I've found it really informative. But she went and spent $3,000 pregnant.
Oh my goodness, yeah. Mm.
And she used less than 10% of the stuff that she bought. I think she's bought a baby bouncy chair thing for like £250. Baby was in it 20 minutes, hated it, and sold it on eBay for a tenner. And so I just remember at the beginning, like, reminding myself, don't get sucked into the parent trap, because it is a con. There's, in the beginning, there's very little, I think, that you need. You know, the basics, obviously, but you don't need the fancy bells and whistles and spending $3,000 on a, you know, the best rattles and the best. Don't need any of that. In the beginning, you need very little. No. And hey, guess what? I know it doesn't feel like this, but when you give birth, the shops don't automatically shut.
It's true.
You have to remind yourself that the day after you give birth, everything's still open.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And usually 24 hours.
Yes.
So if you need a dummy, you can get one. If you need milk, nappies, if you need a car seat, you can, on Amazon, you can get one delivered the next day.
If you need Anusol and lactulose, it's all available.
All available. Yes. Everything's there. So I just had to keep telling my, because I felt my anxiety, like when I'd be on Instagram and I'd be looking at baby stuff and I'd be like, oh, I don't have this and I don't have that. And I'd feel my anxiety. I'd be like, whoa, hun, calm yourself down. You've got the basics. It's a baby. They don't need a lot at the beginning. You're going to plan to try and hopefully breastfeed. So just chill. And so I did. It's just, you have to keep telling yourself to chill. Chill, 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 chill.
And you're right. Actually, at the beginning, they need you. So spend that $3,000 on you.
100%.
Get yourself some nice stuff, you know, get a massage, get whatever.
Definitely,
you know,
get a pregnancy massage.
Spend the money on.
Oh my God, I got a pregnancy massage. I cried. I was like, oh, thank you so much. It was amazing. She was like, okay, Han, thanks, bye.
But Nadia, you know, Becky is a remedial massage therapist. And she's incredible.
I think I messaged you actually saying, get a massage, please, babe.
Yeah. And I bought, actually, one of the best things I did buy was an at-home massager thing from Amazon with heated little things that go round.
Oh, lovely.
And I don't know if it's controversial because people say, oh, cut massage when you're pregnant. I don't know. But let me tell you something. For me, I used it every single night. And I mean, it was orgasmic. It was the best. I jumped into bed ready to put my heated massager on. And I just sat there and it just would massage my back. And I moved it all over from the top to the bottom and it all got warm. And I was like, best thing I bought.
That's what you spend the money on.
Thinking about lovely things that you do for yourself and sort of really looking after yourself well, both mind and body. So it can be the big things, it can be the little things. You know, you talk a lot about being a solo mama and you've got to look out for yourself, girl, haven't you? What are on your absolute must-have sort of lists of when you're feeling a bit depleted and hopefully before you feel depleted, actually, to fill your tank back up again?
During pregnancy or after? Because the only reason I ask...
Both.
Well, yeah. The biggest, for me, the biggest thing that helped my mental health was a bath.
Okay.
A bubble bath, not just any old bath, like a boob, I call it a buble bath. So you've got to have your bubble, you've got to have it super duper hot. That's what I mean. Like, I like it super duper duper hot. Loads of bubbles and a bit of buble in the background.
Oh,
and
nice.
You, as you get in the water, even... If when I was suffering from my mental health the worst, I didn't realize how anxious I was and how my shoulders were by my ears and everything was tense. My whole body was just tense because I was suffering from full-blown hyper anxiety. I would get into the bath and the heated water would force my muscles to relax, even just like 10%. And when you're really, when I was really suffering from bad mental health, that 10% made the world of difference. And it was a, it was something I it was forced on. So the fact that I forced my muscles to relax was like, I got out the bath and that was, oh, it was amazing. So for me, a bath became something really important. And when I was pregnant, obviously I couldn't have super duper hot baths, which was very annoying because that was such a integral part of my day. And I remember the first bath I had after I gave birth and I made it super duper hot. And again, I think I cried. There's a theme because I was just like, oh, I'm back, baby. And it was just beautiful. But it was just that half an hour. Sometimes it literally would only be half an hour. Getting in the bath, getting the bubbles, the smell. I'd have to have like a eucalyptusy, lavendery, spa-y smell to like, again, relax everything down. Nice music on. Or if I was in the mood, I'd have to watch something fun. So I watched a lot of RuPaul's Drag Race.
Oh, brilliant.
And just to switch my mind off.
Yeah.
I needed something to just stop. Just for a minute. Stop. Turn the key. Just stop overthinking. Stop thinking that you're going to be a bad mum, you're a bad person, you're a bad this, doom and gloom. Yeah. Just stop, just for a little bit and give yourself permission.
Yeah.
And then you instantly feel better.
Love that.
Absolutely. I think it sounds lovely. It sounds like you had a real sort of ritual to it. Mm. Like you knew exactly the sequence of things that almost kind of initiate this, you know, shutting down the element of the overwhelm and sort of just really concentrating on yourself for half an hour. And sometimes it just can take 20 minutes, half an hour to make all the difference.
And like you said, it's a ritual. So my body knew, so I'd get excited. So also as well, I'd lay a big towel on my bed because I might have my bath so hot that I need to like lie down for about 10 minutes before I can actually do anything. I do. It's like, honestly, my cheeks are bright red.
You slightly pass out afterwards.
Absolutely. But it's fabulous. I love every minute. And so I put a big towel on my bed. So I'd literally get out the bath, wrap myself up and just go and collapse on the towel and then just spend 10 minutes just chilling while my heart rate comes down and I start like being able to breathe again. But I tell you what, afterwards, oh, I felt like a new woman.
Nadia, are you one of those that in the height of summer when everyone's complaining about the heat in the UK, you're one of those that's like, bring it on. I'm loving it.
Love it. Love it. I like it more with a swimming pool and a cocktail by my hand. Not going to lie.
Nice.
But yeah, I bring it. I'm a sun baby. I love the sun. I love the heat. I love not having to wear layers.
Ugh. Talking of heat, you are very well known for being a bit of a dating guru. What top tips would you have for a single mama who's about to start kind of, you know, navigating the dating scene again? Any top tips for that?
I'm an old school dater, so I'm not really a fan of the apps, if I'm honest. However, we don't have much choice at the moment, do we?
Yeah, true.
Sort of different local lockdowns happening and all that sort of stuff. So The apps can work, and they do work for some people. My brother met his wife on Tinder. It can happen.
Amazing.
Unfortunately, though, the statistics are very low. So I think online dating is a good place to kind of start. But again, it's about expectation.
Yeah.
You're not going to go on, chat with a guy, meet up with him, have loads of chemistry, date loads, be your boyfriend, live happily ever after. Like, it's just not going to happen. You have to sift through so much rubbish before you find somebody that will even meet up with you for a coffee.
Wow.
I think it's on average about, you have to send about 100 messages before you actually meet someone up in real life.
Wowzers. And as a single mum, that's tiring, right? Because you're already a bit knackered.
It's a, dating on apps is a full-time job.
Yeah.
Literally, you have to spend hours because you are literally sifting through, you know, the messages of, hey, what am I supposed to, what am I supposed to reply to that? I'm not a horse. Like, what the hell?
The banter and the communication. And also, like, I can imagine, because to be honest with you, I met my now husband, I met him when we were at school, so it's been like donkey's year. So I've like vicariously lived my life through all my friends who've been on the apps, and they're just like, oh, sometimes I just have to come off it, because telling my life story over and over and over again just actually bores me sometimes.
Yeah. And there is, it does, I coined a term called dating app depression. It's a real thing. When you open up the app and your heart just sinks, because you get another message from another idiot being like, hey hun, want to come on Netflix and chill? And you're just like, oh, for God's sake, where's the real men that want to have a relationship?
People coming from with these awful lines.
Yeah, and so you end up having to delete your apps. And that's the first thing I do with my clients. When my clients come to me and have coaching sessions, I make them delete all of their dating apps, because it's like a drug addict. They hate it, but they love it. And when I make them delete it, they're like, scared. And then 3 days later, I'll always get a message being like, thank you. I cannot tell you, I've got my life back. And I'm like, yeah, see, now we can go out and meet real people, and you can actually get chemistry and meet somebody great. But again, that's difficult. So if you're going online, two things. One, please, please, please put a genuine picture of yourself, and even one potentially where you don't think you look that great. Because if you put pictures of you face-tuned, filtered, 10 years ago, you're being dishonest with it, first of all. And when you do hopefully meet up, he's going to look at you and go, huh? Like, I would rather, I walk into every date I've ever been on from an app, and they always go, gosh, you're so much better looking in real life than your pictures. And I'm like, rather than walking in them going, oh, she don't look like her pictures. Oh, I don't know about her.
That's a really good bit of advice. I wouldn't have thought to do that, actually.
Yeah, because
you almost think, oh, go for the best one, don't
you? No, because they've got nothing to compare it to. So they, if you've put on 5 stone, they don't know what you look like before, hun. So, you know, like, just if they like you now with your double chin and your, you know, back fat, trust me, when they see you with a bit of glam on, looking fabulous, see your personality to go with it, they're going to be blown away. So yeah, I'm not saying like put like ugly pictures on, but just don't, I imagine every man on there is about 30% less good looking than his pictures, because people just put on the best.
Yeah.
So put on something real, see what happens. Be prepared to have to sift through a load of rubbish before you find someone that's even half genuine. And do not for one second lower your standards because you're online.
Yeah, that makes sense. It always comes back to, you know, following your instinct. And we talk about this loads with parenting as well. And you're talking about it out there in obviously different elements and different parts of your life as well. Finally, Nadia, we always ask the same question at the end of our episodes. If you could add a note to pop inside a mother box heading out to a brand new mum with your best bit of mum advice on it, what would it be?
You are enough.
Yes. Simple.
Yeah, it just, it is, because you are. And for me, the biggest, again, like the mum guilt was basically always came down to me feeling insecure. Could I do it? Was I ready? Could I cope with it? Could I handle the pain of labour? Like, could I do it? And I just had to keep telling myself, like, I am enough. I am enough. I am enough. And by actually saying the words to yourself, you force the bad voices away. It's three simple words that can change the whole way that you think about yourself, which is, you know, where it's at. Lovely. If you think you can do something, by golly, you can do it.
I love that. Oh, thank you so much, Nadia. It's been so, I could literally have talked to you for hours and hours. I've got more to say.
We're storytellers as well. We love, love, love Anatta. And actually having you on the show today has been absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much for joining us, darling.
Thanks once again to the gorgeous Nadia for joining us today and sharing her birth story and postnatal experience with us.
If you enjoyed this episode and want to know more about the work that we do, look out for our books, The Little Book of Self-Care for New Mums and The Little Book of Self-Care for Mums-to-Be, where we will talk further about birth, parenthood, relationships and much more.
Join us again next week for more chats with another amazing guest. Do let us know what you thought over on Instagram and please subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast. See you next time on Notes from the Mother Box.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.